welcome to 30 Plus One, the podcast, the community and all-round connect for music managers. And because I couldn't get anyone else to do this, here I am, your host, Kadee Campbell. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 4 of 30 Plus One for music managers. Yay, we made it. So this is a really big one today with a lot of content, so we're going to jump right in. Today we are going to look at how musicians and consequently music managers can make money from the music industry. Now, I think firstly, it's really important to acknowledge that there's a really big space in between making nothing and selling out stadium tours and selling £1 million worth of merchandise and getting sponsorship deals, etc. And actually, there's a lot of musicians and music managers that live within this space. I think, as with a lot of creative industries at the beginning, it can seem really far away to make money, or sometimes people feel too focused on the creative to think about associating that with income streams. But actually, it's really important to look at income streams if you're thinking about the sustainability of pursuing a music career or pursuing a music management career. So as I said, we're going to jump right into it, and we're going to start by looking at the first activity, which is live performance. This is an obvious one, and it also has a lot of additional benefits other than just finance in terms of refining your live performance and, you know, getting your band together and used to performing together, networking. So even just not just meeting the promoters, but meeting some people that like your music, meeting technical people, sound engineers, etc., that kind of thing, other artists, and also building your following. Now, right at the beginning of your career, right in the early stages, I would say that it's unlikely that you'll be able to generate a kind of guaranteed fee, which is an amount that's agreed that you get irrespective of whether one person or 300 people turn up. So to kind of get to a point where you are securing that, you definitely cannot ignore the opportunities to engage your fan base and grow your fan base, even at the beginning, and you're starting from a small space. What I would say about live performance, though, is wherever you are in your career, it's always a way that you can just, it's always an activity that you can start immediately and always a way you can make some money, like I said, depending on how you do it. Now, for popular music, there are quite a lot of promoters who put on live nights for developing bands. You can look at venues that put on live music and contact the promoters through those venues, or they're also quite easy to find on social media as well. Now, some of these promoters are better at curating the lineup than others. So the best ones, with the best ones, you won't find a soul act right next to a, you know, hard rock act, for example, or, you know, a heavy metal act. So and it does matter, because you want the ones who curate a good night, one, for the people that come along, but also because that gives you the best opportunity to extend your fan base. Because at the beginning, when you're performing these gigs, you will mostly be inviting along people that you likely will know. So it will be friends and family. It's how it starts. It's how everybody starts, you know. And then the friends and family bring a friend, and then they bring a friend, and then suddenly you've got this growing fan base. And that's what they're there for. So, you know, that shouldn't be a problem. And you get to a point where you're doing genuine engagement outside of the people that you know. But yet, like I said, the chances are much increased if you're working with a promoter who actually can put together a good lineup, so you could potentially engage some of the fans of the other artist as well. There are some pretty horrendous door split arrangements that some promoters put out there, and this is essentially where the artist and the promoter split the money that's taken at the door. Usually there's a set fee that the promoters take before any split, so as to cover their basic costs. So this one might be things like a sound engineer, for example, and maybe a bit of their time. And then following this, the ticket income, so the income from the ticket sales, is then split, but not necessarily equally. One real life example that I have is a band getting 10% of the ticket price, so maybe around £1 for every £10 ticket that's sold. And this is with the band and the management doing 100% of the work of getting people through the door. It's 100% of the promotional work, and this isn't necessarily a profitable venture for the band and the management. Even on the basis, let's say, for example, of getting 200 people in, £1 for those 200 people, so making £200, £50 going straight away to the promoter or sound engineer, and then you're left with 150, and this could be £50 each. And this is with quite, you know, it's no small task in the beginning getting 200 people to a gig for some acts. So this could be £50 each. And in terms of covering your time, you need to think not just about the time that you're on stage. So it's not just 45 minute set or an hour and a half set. It's actually the travel there for some members. It will be rehearsal time and any cost that you might have associated with that. It will be getting there early for sound check, setup. Then you have the performance, and then of course packing up as well. So you definitely have to do your sums, but you need to be really mindful, really realistic with yourself about your fan base and how many people you can get in. The things you need to think about are, how close is this date to another date you've performed? Is it an area that your fan base can get to? Are you going to be able to be creative about the ways that you can engage numbers so that you make sure that it's really worth your time? I have actually seen acts clean up on deals that I thought were not that favorable to the artist, but actually they made quite a decent amount of money. They were actually a band, the one I'm thinking of in particular, that were in college, and it looked like they invited their whole college to the gig. It looked like everyone had a great time, and like I said, it was actually ended up being quite profitable for them. I would also say that there are many promoters who do fair and favorable splits geared towards the artist as well. So yeah, definitely just do your sums and make sure that it's worth your while. Other options for live include booking out a venue yourself, so organizing your own event, which can be heaps of fun, but also takes quite a lot of organization as well. Now, a lot of the common arrangements are that you could have a small deposit or no deposit at all, but it would be that the venue would take the whole money raised from the bar, and that you get 100% of the ticket price, and you can set that, you know, where it more or less wherever you would want to set it. But you need to be realistic, of course, about the amount that people would spend to come and see you, or that your fans can spend. Now, this also means that you'll be doing 100% of the promotional work, and quite often this will depend on the venue, but you'll be almost wholly reliant on the promotional work that you do. So you need to think about that as well. I think the line for the episode needs to be realistic, because I've probably said it 10 times already, and I've probably got 10 more times saying it. But if you aren't realistic in the numbers that you could get through and the amount that people could spend at the bar, you could end up having to foot the difference between the minimum bar spend and what was spent, and it could be a substantial bill for you, which nobody wants. No one wants any part of that. So I would also caveat that a really good idea for doing this event of your own is to play a few gigs of yourself play a few gigs that are organized by others first, so building up your fan base. Or something else actually that I just thought of, which could be good, is that you could do it in collaboration perhaps with a few other musicians or bands to really ensure that you get the numbers through. And lastly, real quick, once your fan base has grown, your options in performance really increase. And you could get the option of having a set fee for your performance, which often would work out better than having to worry about live performance, rehearsal, promotion, etc., and also making sure that a certain number of people get through the door. Always promote, even if you have a set fee, because this is about, you know, you want to be bookable, you want to be an attraction, and especially if you want to play a venue again, I would definitely stress the importance of promoting, even if they are going to pay you a set fee. when set fees come into place, you can then be looking at venues with their own natural footfall. So this gives you a great opportunity to expand your existing fan base. And sometimes, a lot of the times, these venues are a little bit prestigious as well, just in terms of being able to say that you've played there, which is really great for your profile and, again, really great for growing your fan base. Now, set fees can start from about £200 to £300 and go up to sky's the limit. So all depending on the budget for the venue and, of course, the profile of the artist, you or the artist that you're working with, if you are a manager. The second activity that we're going to look at is royalties. These are what is paid to an artist when their music is used in some way. There are four types of royalties. There's mechanical, public performance, synchronization, and print music. And you'll see this will become pretty obvious, but performers and composers are entitled to different types of royalties. So the first one that I mentioned was mechanical. Mechanical royalties are paid for the reproduction of a song in any form. So the physical, which will be CDs, cassettes, hey, retro, vinyl or digital form, which is like streamed, downloaded, online music channels, or even when music is added to products. So things like cards or toys, that kind of thing. These royalties are administered, collected, and paid by the MCPS in the UK, which, in case you care, because sometimes people ask me about what these stand, what things stand for, and normally I don't know, but I did look it up. This is the Mechanical Copyright Protection Society, which is the essentially the mechanical collections organisation for the UK, and there'll be an equivalent in other countries that you can easily look up. So labels, TV broadcasters, online channels, anyone that reproduces that music will pay fees to this organisation. And currently the MCPS rate paid is 8.5% of the dealer price for albums. So this is what the music is actually sold to a retailer for. So the amount per album would then be divided by track, and then it's paid monthly and split between songwriters and or their respective publishers. And we'll talk about publishers a bit more later. If the songwriter has a publishing deal, the split will be on their pre-approved terms, which again, we'll touch on when we talk about publishers. To collect, you just need to register with the MCPS, which is fairly cheap. It's about £100 at the moment, I believe, and easy to do. It's mostly done online. You'll get a statement that shows which work you are being paid for and where and when it was downloaded or reproduced and those kind of details. So next up is performance royalties. In the UK, PRS for Music is the umbrella organisation for collection, administration and distribution of royalties. And this is made up of the MCPS that we've just found out about and already spoken about, and PRS. And for the SWATs in the back, that is for Performing Rights Society. Both organisations, they work together under this umbrella organization PRS for Music to collect royalties, but to get royalties from each agency. So if you as an artist or an artist wants to collect these royalties from MCPS or PRS, then you need to actually register with both of those organizations individually. And speaking about registrations, for PRS for Music covers several countries which are known as territories. And so if your music is performed in any of these territories, they'll collect the money and distribute your share to you if you are registered with them. Of course, not every country is covered. Well, it's not of course, but it's kind of unfortunate at the moment. I imagine that more and more territories will come under being covered, But if you have a legitimate reason to think that you are due royalties or should be collecting royalties outside of the countries that are covered by PRS for Music, then you will need to register with collection agencies that cover these territories. Now, you can see which territories are covered, which countries are covered by visiting the PRS for Music website if you are based in the UK, and I will put the link in the show notes. Oh, I haven't mentioned show notes so far. If this is the first time that you are joining, I will just mention mid episode a few things as I remember. So I will do show notes. It's not a transcript of the show, but it is just points of reference, action notes, any links, and I'll update them. I will definitely endeavour to update them as and when they need to be. So performance royalties are the most wide-ranging of the royalties, as you can imagine. They are paid for performance of any copyrighted material. And so in practice, this covers live performance, like live performing, like a gig, or DJ sets. Yeah, like I said, the gigs, concerts, tours, radio, any music that's played in a public place. This includes things like going into your corner shop and hearing music played, any performance of music. So how much can you get as an artist is kind of calculated depending on the type of performance. So I have one example. So it could be roughly around £10 for each event at a very small venue. So you could kind of get double bubble in terms of you get your fee that you'll get for the live performance, but then you'll also get the royalties that you can collect as well. What I will say is that details of rates and up-to-date rates are always going to be best found on the PRS website, but I really wouldn't spend too much time looking for them because they don't offer an extensive explanation of the rates. And I think this is because there are so many variables. So your best chance, if you're trying to work out how much I could make or how much I will make on these royalties, is really to register once you have, there'll be substantial value in it for you, and then to raise an individual query. So some of the variables that I talked about which will affect the level of royalties that you get can be things like venue or the station size, if we're talking about radio, and length of play. You can see that digital use of a song, so if we're talking about online use, so maybe like a YouTube video, for example, that's played in a public space, could generate both mechanical and performance royalties. In terms of fees, like I said, that there are a lot of variables, but on the PRS website, there are some rates which are set and explained out fully. But again, depending on when you listen to this, things could change. So it will always be your best resort to go to the website and check it for the most current information. But as it stands now, this is 2018 in July, for BBC Radio 1 play, the rates available from the website were £10.98 for a minute of track. And then for a station like Jazz FM, it was £7.58. And then there was a really big jump, which I thought I'd pull, for like Virgin Radio. So that's obviously one people want to get on. £31.34 for a minute played of the track. So all these figures, I have to caveat that they are ballpark and that they can change and that they vary from payment to payment. So you will need to register and raise that individual query that I mentioned if you have any further questions about it. Next, we're going to look at royalties from print music, and these are royalties that can be paid from music that is transcribed to sheet music, so written up into notes, so actually someone could reproduce and play that song, for example. And then that sheet music is distributed and the royalties payment comes from the reproduction, so the copying of that transcribed sheet and the sale of that sheet of music. So short and simple for that one. And the next one, next type of royalty that we mentioned is synchronization. So synchronization, or sync for short, is a license that gives use from the owners of the music to a third party so that the music can be used against a visual media of any kind, for a fee, of course. So this includes things like music used in TV programs, in films, in video games. So you'll note that I said that it's a deal between the owner and someone wishing to use the music. So this means that the master copy, which is like the master recording, the template, and publishing copyrights, must be cleared in order for synchronization deal to take place. So this means you need to know and have sign off from people who control both. So generally masters are owned by whoever paid for the recording. So this could be the artist, probably at an emerging stage. And copyright is normally owned by a publisher or a record label, although many songwriters and of course emerging artists will retain the copyright for their music, emerging artists that are unsigned. Factors that will influence the sync fee, so how much that deal can actually make for an artist, depend on the territory, one of the terms we used earlier, the amount of times that the music will be used and played, the length of the license, the type of media, big blockbuster film, small independent, you know, you can imagine the difference in fee, and of course the profile of an artist. So I've been trying my hardest to give you fixed amounts that you could earn, where I can find definite proof of this or where I know about this. So for an emerging artist, these type of fees can range from anything on average between £1,000 to £20,000. So, you know, a good little income spinner for you if you can organise that. There are other types of income via sync license other than the direct deal that we've just talked about. So some artists, this is producers and songwriters alike, create stock music for music libraries, which are exactly what they say, libraries of music. So some of the libraries include Shutterstock, Premium Beat, The Music Case, Production Tracks and Audio Network. But you can, of course, Google to find lists, I'm sure, of other options. I don't actually have any recommendations at the moment or reviews of any of the services. But as I develop these, they will definitely be either updated via show notes or another podcast, another episode of the podcast. These organizations I've mentioned and others like them, the music libraries, specialize in creating stock music that can be licensed for different uses. So the uses similar to what I was, well, the ones that we were talking about before. So putting the music to image. They all work in different ways in forms of payment. So on some sites, you upload the track and you get 50% of the whatever price it is that you set. Or other ways are you get a royalty split every month. Some other ways are that you can set your own rate. And then also there are others where you get an agreed percentage. So it's not necessarily the set 50%, but it could be something that's pre-agreed before the arrangement. The thing to think about with these arrangements is that you will have no say in who will use your music and where. So if you are particular about this, then obviously this will not work for you. So the next way to make money in the music industry that we're going to look at is getting a publishing deal. This is connected to sync licensing, but it's also a separate income stream in itself. Getting a publishing deal means that a publisher will work on your behalf to get all the royalties that you are owed. a good publisher will also proactively work to get more opportunities to exploit your music. So the most opportunities to get your music synced to other media, as we spoke about before. So in exchange, of course, they get a cut of the income from the sync. The next way that we're going to look at is performance jobs, ones where you may not be promoting your own material, but where you get to stay working in the industry, you still get to perform, and you also get to build your network. They are really great for raising a musician's profile. So being a session musician is an option under this. This is where a musician is hired for live or recorded sessions. Essentially, an artist will do well here when they've already had a good amount of studio and performing experience, but also where they also have a versatile style. It just means they're more hireable, I guess, as well. For singers in particular, there are additional opportunities for people looking for singers who they want to be on their demos. So, you know, getting into this work, as I'm sure it's the kind of benefits for, especially for an emerging artist, are pretty clear. And it will take work to get into it. Like I said, the experience will help. But also for these type of jobs, it's about finding the opportunity, which quite often comes from word of mouth. So this is very much, again, very important thing, a thing I always talk about networking. So yeah, the work needs to be done about building your network. But also you can find opportunities in industry magazines and industry websites as well. I'll certainly cover a bit more about this in future and would definitely really love to speak to an artist who is working full-time as a session musician and talk about their journey as well. So stay posted for episodes on that. Staying with jobs in performing, there is also paid collaborations. This is where musicians can write songs for or produce songs for other artists for a fee. There are many musicians who make a healthy salary from this alone. Lastly, with performance jobs, there are cover gigs like wedding bands and bands for other events. There are agencies you can join that can help you with booking these gigs. Of course, you could do a lot of groundwork in terms of generating your own website and social media content and targeting people who might be organizing these kind of events. I would think also that event organizers, as well as social media, will also use sites like Reverb Nation and Music Glue to scout out and book talent for their events as well. Another way to generate money from your music is to monetize your fan base. Once you've put in all this graft building your following and you've got to a substantial number of people that engage with you, particularly on social media, then there is potential not only for these people to support your music, but to support your other endeavors as well. So again, if you have this good number of followers and they are engaged, you can get deals, affiliate deals, which are essentially sponsorship deals, paid promotion, where you can promote a product and you get a commission or you get a set fee from the sales as part of an arrangement. So you can also do things along this lines of also monetizing your YouTube channel. Just as a note, you know, please don't forget who your fans are. So make sure that it's things that are relevant to your fan base, I would say, so you don't lose them. That may come hand in hand, because any good person who's going to pay someone for a product placement, an advert, or to be an affiliate should know that they can actually reach their targeted market. But I wouldn't take it for granted, and I would definitely, you know, use some of my own judgment to make sure that whatever the artist is pushing is in line with something that the people that follow them would actually want to know about or want to purchase. You know, you don't want to value your fans, or, you know, not give them the respect, and don't forget why they are there in the first place, or why they started following you in the first place. So really make sure that there's a balance of pushing products or sponsorship, you know, products that you're being sponsored for, with a balance of still giving them new music, you know, performance photos, some pull factors as well. So it's not all push. Next, jobs in music. If you are going to have a 9-to-5, if you are going to do that grind, why not have one that actually helps you build your contacts and helps you fulfill or helps your artist fulfill what they want to do in the music industry and keeps you in the music industry? The list of options is absolutely endless. You could work for a label, venue programming, events, festival roles, working other music organizations like streaming services, there's promoters, there's ticket sales, and loads of those roles are actually quite flexible as well and can work around performing, managing artists, etc. So again, start by looking at music industry specific publications, definitely for the opportunities, but definitely what I was going to say is don't forget about your transferable skills. You may not have done this exact job before, but don't discount yourself. And remember what, or, you know, make sure you push what you have learned along the way. And finally, funding. Crowdfunding, government funding, organizations like PRS. I think funding is potentially a whole episode on its own, and we can definitely come back to that. But getting this kind of funding can act as an income supplement for musicians and for managers. And it can do things like allow an artist to tour, to perform at a festival, which might not be paying a fee, but might be good for profile raising, to promote the work in a different way that you may not have had the funds to or haven't done before. And it also has an additional benefit of lending a bit of, I guess, endorsement to your career, because the organization that you receive the funding from essentially does endorse the level of work that you're producing or could produce. And it's also great, again, for building those networks. So we've come to the end of episode 4, Making Money from Music, looking at income streams. I hope you have found it useful. As always, I would love to hear your feedback. Please reach out via social media. Particularly, we have a Facebook, Join 30 Plus One, and we have a group there where there is a space for discussion of every episode of the podcast. And if you want to further support, please subscribe and rate. Again, thank you and see you next time. Thank you for listening to 30 Plus One for Music Managers at 30plus1.co.